Sermon on the Mount O, and I've entitled this lesson, Treasure and Eyeballs. Treasure, as in money, a $5 bill, £5 note from the UK, treasure, money, and also eyeballs, like eyeballs. It will all make sense soon, I promise you. Thank you for continuing to listen to these installments in our series from the Sermon on the Mount, and I bring you warm greetings from Moldova. Today, we're in the second half of chapter 6 of Matthew. Do not lay up for yourselves treasures on earth, where moth and rust consume, and where thieves break in and steal. But lay up for yourself treasures in heaven, where neither moth nor rust consume, and where thieves do not break in and steal. For where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. The lamp of the body is the eye. If therefore your eye is single, your whole body will be full of light. But if your eye is evil, your whole body will be full of darkness. If therefore the light that is in you is darkness, how great that darkness is. Matthew 6, 19 to 22. Jesus says there are two places where we can store treasure. One is in heaven, one is on earth. And wealth is never really safe. Even in our day with insurance protecting banks, that doesn't mean that inflation won't hurt you. It doesn't mean that there couldn't be a partial collapse of the economic system. We shouldn't put our faith in possessions. In the illustrations Jesus gives, moths eat away at garments, and rust corrodes metal and coins. Thieves break in. They dig in, literally, through your wall and try to find where our treasure has been hidden, perhaps under the floor. And so, whether it's thieves or rust or insects, wealth was not secure in the ancient world, nor is it totally secure now. This is not to say we shouldn't make wise decisions financially, but this cannot be the primary place where we're storing treasure. In fact, there are real dangers if we store up too much, then we'll think that we don't need God. We're all set. Aren't we to make as much money as possible, you might say? Have we not been told to make all we can and save all we can and give away all we can? I think that was John Wesley. Well, within limits, I think there's some wisdom to that. But are we pursuing wealth? Are we maxed out in pursuing wealth? Like we're working crazy hours just for a better standard of living? Remember Jesus said in Luke 12, "Fear not, little flock, for it is your Father's good pleasure to give you the kingdom. Sell your possessions, give to the needy. Provide yourselves with money bags that do not grow old, and with a treasure in the heavens that does not fail, where no thief approaches and no moth destroys, for where your treasure is, there will be your heart also." So it's a very fair question. Is this our treasure? Is it in our wallet or a handbag or a bank account or investment? Or is it in God? I don't read this passage in Luke 12 as forbidding riches, however you define them, but it warns us of the dangers of wealth and encourages us to be emotionally invested in the right place. That is, our heart is in the right place. A word, a special word to Americans and citizens of other rich nations. And this is from the Apostle Paul, 1 Timothy 6. "As for the rich in this present age, charge them not to be haughty, nor to set their hopes on the uncertainty of riches, but on God, who richly provides us with everything to enjoy. They are to do good, to be rich in good works, to be generous and ready to share, thus storing up treasure for themselves as a good foundation for the future, so that they may take hold of that which is truly life." The world says real life, abundant life, is financial security. It's a comfortable, maybe even luxurious standard of living, having possessions, prestige purchases, to impress our friends. This is not what the Bible says, and the Bible is full of warnings. In fact, Jesus didn't just warn about it. He lived against this philosophy. He lived simply. The apostles lived simply. The early Christians lived simply. I'd like to share about two early Christians who were executed in the mid-200s in the persecution under Valerian. Cyprian of North Africa says, "The fool who was to die that very night," Luke 12, 20, "was rejoicing in his stored goods. He to whom life was already failing," because he's getting older, thinking of the abundance of his food. In contrast, the Lord tells us that a man becomes perfect and complete by selling all his goods and distributing them for the use of the poor. He thereby lays up for himself a storehouse in heaven. Now, Cyprian was not speaking hypothetically. He had been wealthy before he was a Christian. But when he was baptized, he sold so much of his estate, he used the proceeds to help the poor. He also says, neither does the state, that is the government, take away the property entrusted to God. Right. Government can't touch that. Nor does the tax collector intrude on it. There's no tax on treasure in heaven. Likewise, no criminal plots cart it away, as we see in many crimes and actual films. That inheritance is placed in a vault kept under guard by God himself. Where are we storing up our treasure? Lawrence, the second martyr I wanted to mention. This is a time when Roman officials are basically seizing property, anything the churches own. This is before the time where churches had a lot of wealth, but it was a time where more and more people were being reached in all classes. In Rome, the authorities confront Lawrence. He's a deacon in the church, and they demand surrender all the valuables that the church owns. Lawrence is very smart, and he says, okay, not today. I'm going to collect the church's wealth, and I'll give it to you tomorrow. And the next morning, Lawrence assembled a large group of the poor who were supported by the church. You know, this may have been the 1,500 to 2,000 people we read about in another source in Rome at that time. But he brings all the poor. And when the officials arrive, the pagans, and they demand the loot, you know, give us the wealth, Lawrence points to the poor and the needy. This is the wealth of the church. The disappointed and very angry officials then put him to death. What's more important, people or possessions? The point is we should invest in people. Be willing to liquidate unnecessary assets. That is, sell some things, live more simply. Keep hold of what is necessary. Retain what is necessary to continue to be able to provide hospitality. So obviously, if you give everything, then you can't invite people to your home because you have no home. You want to be able to help fellow Christians and to give for the poor and get to the poor and not be a burden on others. But living modestly means that we probably require less than we think. We don't have to keep up with the ever-rising standard of living, which is the average trend. Well, the second scripture I read, which immediately follows the first, the lamp is the of the body is the eye. The lamp of the body is the eye. Like, you know, you look at something and then the light comes from your eye to the object. Well, not quite, although some people may have thought that way. Jesus said, if your eye is single, and I think we're talking here about focus, your whole body's full of light. If it's evil, your whole body's full of darkness. We've got some mixed metaphors here. We have lots of metaphors in this talk. Jesus is trying to get his point across clearly. So we have treasure in heaven, treasure on earth. We've got dark and light. We have God and mammon that's coming up. And then we have these the word about the thief and the rust and the moths. I think what he's saying here is that people who look at life through a defective spiritual eye, imaginary high values they attach to their possessions. If it's not a spiritual perspective, you think your possessions are worth more than they really are. In effect, the Sermon on the Mount has lots of teaching, extended teaching against materialism. Now, I'm almost done for today's message, but we're not even halfway through what Jesus says on this topic. I'd like to give a little challenge here, and this is from John Chrysostom. He was a preacher, a very popular preacher in the 400s in Constantinople, and then from someone more recently, a biblical scholar named Donald Hagner. John Chrysostom says this, among other things, the wealthy tremble at the thought of poverty. They're really afraid of being poor. I knew an older Christian who told me a number of times in her final years, I don't want to go to the poorhouse. I'm afraid of being poor. And maybe if people had gone through the Great Depression in North America back in the 1930s, that's a fear. But actually, this person was quite well off. There's a fear, though. You know, the poor man, like the proverb says, he's not afraid he's going to get robbed. What can they take? It's the rich guy who has to take these extra measures. Well, John Chrysostom says, in fact, They fear not only poverty itself, but even a trifling loss of possession. That is, they just lose something that's even not that important. They lose their mind. Those who lack necessary food do not grieve as much and bewail themselves as much as rich people do when they lose some small possession. In fact, many of the rich have even hanged themselves when they lost their possessions, not willing to bear such an ill turn of events. I may have shared in my book on suffering, I had a relative, I guess this is a distant relation, who was in debt. Not even that much in debt, as it turned out, after his death, but he was in debt, and so he took his life, just for being in debt. And not even that much in debt. It's crazy. You wish people trusted God. They knew Jesus. They knew the gospel. We wouldn't react this way by economic setbacks. Some people would rather die than live without wealth. And if that's the case, their eye is dark indeed. It's not light. They're full of darkness. So, do we obsess over money? Are we conflicted in our soul between serving the Lord and striving for wealth and comfort? Or between serving the Lord and maintaining our level of comfort? And now, from a modern writer, we're fast-forwarding quite a few years, like 1,500 years, 1,400. Wealth, it happens, is only the most conspicuous example of that which can distract from true discipleship. Only the rarest of individuals can possess much of the world's wealth without becoming enslaved to it and without letting it cut the nerve of true discipleship. Something about wealth that can cut the nerve of true discipleship. Has that happened to you? And Jesus' parable of the soils, the third soil does well, so it seems, but eventually it's choked by weeds. It's choked by thorns. And Jesus says this corresponds to the anxiety that is attached to riches, to lifestyle, to wealth, to possessions. It's materialism. Much more likely to choke someone out and take that person away from God. Much more likely than a misunderstanding of some doctrinal point or some more common sins. But this is something to take very seriously. We can become enslaved to wealth. It can cut the nerve of true discipleship. Let's focus on what's truly important. And this discussion will continue in Sermon on the Mount P, but that's all for today. God bless you.